KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The sound of fortune hunters' pickaxes digging for gold in 1850s, California marks the opening scene of Girls of the Golden West by composer John Adams. In creating the opera, John Adams and librettist Peter Sellers drew heavily on the letters of a doctor's wife, Louise Clapp, who exposed the brutality toward women and ethnic tensions that simmered during the gold rush. John Adams joins us in studio to discuss the piece, which is at the San Francisco Opera through the 10th of December. And welcome, John Adams.
Thank you, Michael.
You just reminded me it's been almost a decade since you were here last, but pleased to have you back. Why the gold rush? What drew you?
Well, I think two things. I mean, first of all, I've lived in California for over 40 years, and I've had a cabin up in the Sierras and am aware of that lore. And the combination of that history and what's going on right now, particularly Silicon Valley, the kind of wild rush for material gain that we're witnessing right now, you know, companies that don't really do anything being valued in the billions of dollars. I think, you know, it was an interesting time to go back and look at what happened back in the 1850s.
You've just made a rather strong political statement right there. and the opera is strong on politics and also timely, like you've just suggested. I mean, dealing with things like xenophobia against immigrants and racism and bigotry and, you know, misogyny and so many things that are very much, unfortunately, still a part of our bloodlines and the lives we, unfortunately, have in front of us. And the brutality, too. It's a powerful document of the time that you're working with here, the letters. And those letters become sort of central to really to the opera.
Yeah. Well, I do have to say, in the opera's defense, I mean, you say a lot. What you say is right about a lot of those themes. It's also a lot of fun, and I mean, I think there's a great deal of humor and high spirit in the opera, as there was in 1850 in the Sierra Nevada. I think what makes this piece interesting, but also from a from an operatic point of view, controversial, is the fact that the all of the text is original. I mean, the singers are actually singing what these people said and wrote, and it gives it a real authenticity that I think is rare, certainly in the world of opera.
Well, in fact, you're talking about the spirited side of it, and indeed there is that dimension to it. I thought we'd hear a cut, because this is what we're going to hear here. This is the Joe Cannon scene, based on the lyrics of an old miner song. I know you took these lyrics and gave them your old melodies, but it's performed at the Palace Hotel Saloon with a full chorus of men, and it's all about Joe leaving behind his sweetheart in Missouri, only to find out that she has had an affair with the butcher, who has red hair, and it's a great big high-energy chorus number for the men who feel down on their luck while trying to strike it rich. We can keep it organic.
That's it. I'll tell you what I heard, and how I came to roll, and leave my poor baby so far away from home. I used to love that gal there, they called her Sally Black. I asked her to marry me, she said it was a whack. She said to me, Joe Cannon, before we hit the line, you ought to have a little home, keep your little wife.
John Adams with us in studio, shaking his head, as a good composer should. Well, now, where does the music come from? I mean, I ask that question not to be flip or anything, but the fact of the matter is you've got something that you're tackling here, the gold rush, the women of that era and so forth, and then you've got these miners and are so spirited and so forth, right? I want to talk about the creative process a bit.
Well, I'm a word guy, and I'm very stimulated, motivated by a good text. And in the case of this opera, as I said, so much of the text comes from that time. And these Gold Rush lyrics, I discarded the music because most of them were set to familiar tunes of the time. you know, they're a wonderful mix of sentimentality and self-deprecation and humor and bathos. And there's a kind of rugged honesty about them that, it inspired me to write a music that is, has that kind of grittiness and good humor.
Virility, I would say, would be a key word, too. You say you're a word composer, and indeed, I think the observation was made once that Philip Glass is an image composer, you're a word composer, you know. And you, working with Peter Sellers, let's talk about that collaboration. I mean, you know, he drew a lot from these texts, and you've got some Shakespeare here, you've got some Frederick Douglass, you know, you've got a wonderful mix of stuff. How do you work together? I mean, how does that – tell us about how symbiotic it is or how it operates.
Well, you know, collaboration in the arts, I once described it as next to double murder suicide. It's the most painful thing two people can do together. But Peter and I have had a long collaboration that goes back to 1985. And our first opera was Nixon in China, and The Death of Klinghoffer followed that. I don't know really what it is that makes us keep going. I think, first of all, it's mutual respect for what each of us does, and the fact that that Peter has incredible empathy for his characters and perception of the spoken language. Our libretti, particularly the one for Dr. Atomic, which was about Oppenheimer and the invention of the atomic bomb, and this one, they're very controversial in the operatic world because, they don't have an official librettist. But my answer to that is that opera itself is a completely unreal experience. I mean, just think about it. You go into the hall and these people are up on the stage singing at maximum intensity. So to try to demand some sort of bourgeois text or like a Netflix, script is, I think, really silly. We really need to move the level of the spoken language up to the level of the music.
Do the words offer more of a catalyst for the music as opposed to the other way around, the music offering a catalyst to the words? Because I noticed that Peter Sellers was quoted as saying he got unforgettable earworms from a number of the things that you composed.
I'm always motivated by the words first. I've got a wonderful line that my librettist Alice Goodman gave me for Nixon in China, where he comes off the plane and shakes hand with Joe and Lyon. He says, "News, news, news has a kind of mystery," and just that word launched an aria. And the same, it's been like this with this opera. I found so much of this really pleasurable to do, and I think it's delicious. And I'm just sort of surprised at the violence of some of the reactions. That people went to this expecting a sort of operatic experience, and they didn't get what they were expecting, and reacted very strongly.
Can we talk about that? Because I saw Gary Camilla there, who's the editor of San Francisco, and he wrote some very positive things about the opera, as a number of people did. But your own local paper here, Joshua Kosman, it was pretty brutal. He said, I want to get it right here, a miscalculation of astonishing dimensions. whoa.
Well,
I'm glad you're laughing, but you put all this work into it, he really kind of leveled the field with.
I put 2 years into it. I've lived long enough. I'm 70 this year, and it used to be that I was compared to other composers. Now it's even harder because I'm compared to my young self, and I believe in that same review, the critic said that. It wasn't anywhere near as good as my first two operas.
They also compared you to Grandpa and the Simpsons.
Yes. So. Yeah. Well, it's interesting. People get paid for writing that sort of thing. I think, when Nixon in China and The Death of Klinghoffer came out, they were ridiculed and mocked, and you know, people referred to them as undergraduate humor, and you have to realize that you're in a very long game in the arts, and it takes a great deal of time for a work to achieve its formal perfection, if that's ever possible. And it also takes the audience a long time.
You have to train your audience in many ways, don't you?
You have to educate your audience. Yeah. Another writer responded, I thought, really wonderfully. He went twice. He asked for the score to study, and he said twice wasn't enough. And, any kind of work of art needs many, many exposures. You know?
Actually, I saw someone else at the premiere who had been to the dress rehearsal and wanted to come back to the premiere. But he had some of the same kind of criticisms that I read in the Cosman piece. He said there's too much telling, not enough showing. And he really enjoyed it and loved it because you were trying to get the letters in there, the words in there, really, to a great extent.
You know, people have different demands of a theatrical work.
Cosman loved the final soliloquy. I mean, let's at least give him, give you your due that he did give you at the end of that piece that he wrote, which is really extraordinary. I mean, you're dealing with something so, I don't know, I'm searching for words here, but it's ineffable in many ways. You're dealing with the lynching of a woman, the only lynching in the history of California, a Mexican woman. And, bringing that, I thought maybe we'd hear. Let me hear you talk about this before we hear it, John. This is Josefa Segovia after being sexually assaulted by Joe Cannon. She defends herself. She ends up stabbing Joe to death on the 4th of July, 1853. I don't want to give away too much plot here, but the drunken crowd learns of his death and quickly puts her on trial, and it's a totally kangaroo trial. They hang her. And this is the aria that she sings to these rowdy men who are and proclaiming her dignity prior to the hanging. You want to say something about it before we hear it?
No, I think you should just let it rip.
Sobre todas casta, sobre todas casta. Ni un rayo de luna.
I just like to have it keep playing. That's from John Adams' new opera, along with Peter Sellers' Girls of the Golden West. It runs at the San Francisco Opera through December 10th. And if you'd like to join us here in conversation, let me invite you to do that. Our toll-free number is available if you have questions or comments for our guest, John Adams. We welcome you. You can join us now at 866-733-6786, and please feel free to do that. Again, the number to call, 866-733-6786. Love to hear from some of you who saw the opera, who have some thoughts, or would like to go on record in terms of your own reactions. And you can also email them to us, forum@kqed.org, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle's @KQED Forum, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. You also really have the whole diversity of the West here, represented in terms of different ethnicities and so forth. Our own KQED arts people said they wanted more of Native Americans, but, everybody has, like you said, their own Rorschach with an opera especially. I'm wondering, though, you said this is your last full-scale opera. Are you just going to stand by that?
Well, it sounded a little dramatic, but I'm aware that the whole culture of grand opera is threatened simply by finances, and I'm thinking that it would be interesting to write for very small forces and not have it cost millions of dollars, plus. Any kind of change of format is always a challenge for one's creative juices,
Let me just say something before we go to our calls and emails. And again, you can feel free to join us now at 866-733-6786. But that second song, and that soliloquy song of the woman who was hanged, was raped. And it's especially interesting in light of all of these Me Too discussions going on right now and sexual assault as an issue, a major issue as it should have been long ago. But maybe you could go into more detail a little bit about the story, because I know when you were up by your cabin, you had a sheriff up there who kind of took you around and talked about the folklore, the real story, or what may have been the real story.
Well, very little is known about this event. This woman was a young Mexican woman who worked in a bar, a saloon in the town of Downeyville. And what is known is that she was harassed by a white miner in the evening, and then he came back to her tent or wherever she was living, and they had an argument in the morning. She stabbed him, killed him, and she was immediately tried and hanged within 24 hours. I was drawn to that story because not only because of its feminist implications, but also because of its racial implications. This is a Mexican woman. And I thought that many of the themes of California history are things that we're suddenly faced with in a very brutal way, particularly in this era that we're going through right now. I wrote most of this opera in 2016 during the presidential campaign, and I would be setting a chorus of men mocking a woman and calling her their little black señorita. And then I would turn on the television and see a group of angry men yelling, "Lock her up." So I realized that, as the French say, plus ça change, they're just, American history seems to lurch forward and then have a spasm where it goes back. And then hopefully, if you're an optimist, the gains are incremental.
And this opera was commissioned with the Dutch Opera, Dutch National Opera, and the Dallas Opera?
That's correct, yes.
How did that come about?
Well, it's we try to cobble together a consortium because, opera is very expensive. And, even with a full house, it doesn't pay for itself. We've had some wonderful, generous donors in California that have backed this. It's nice to have a European premiere, and I expect that after this run in San Francisco, there'll probably be other companies interested in this.
Let me bring some callers on. Here we go first to Kathy. Kathy, join us.
Good morning. I'm providing some comments from my daughter, who saw the opera with her high school. The entire upper school performing arts department attended the dress rehearsal. She's a young African-American woman who is fluent in Spanish and has lived internationally, and she was just very impressed with how the music really connected issues that she sees in her life, and she was very surprised that those issues have been universal over history. So I just wanted to thank John Adams for bringing a whole new generation of music lovers a format that many young people don't connect to.
Well, that must be music to John Adams' ears.
Thank you. Maybe she could write for the San Francisco Chronicle someday.
Thank you for the call, Kathy. I know it's been a big issue for you, wanting to reach the younger generation, having classical music really get into their minds and hearts. It's challenging, isn't it?
It's really simply getting to them at a young age. I was in Venezuela twice to visit Gustavo Dudamel and see their incredible El Sistema there. And, these are young kids, sometimes age of 5 or 6, and they're brought up thinking that classical music is cool. I've been involved with the Crowden School, this fantastic school in Berkeley, for 30 years. Both of our kids went there. And I know that, children are talented and curious, and they just need to be exposed to it. And that's really the challenge in this society we live in.
And bring another caller on, and that's Argyrius. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. First of all, I'd like to say I'm a big fan of Mr. Adams' work, and the new opera sounds great, and I really want to go and see it. But I took a little bit of an issue with Mr. Adams' initial comment about the tech industry. So as a member of the tech community, you know, saying we have all these billion-dollar companies that really do nothing is a little bit like me saying, hey, we're paying all these opera singers a bunch of money to, like, sing in a funny voice. And especially in light of the fact that, you know, opera needs funding, and it so happens that the tech community is well-funded here and probably funds the opera a lot, you know, it's not nice to make political comments like that. But thank you for taking my call.
No, you want to respond, John?
Well, I think I was a little flippant there. I think what's interesting is companies that don't manufacture anything, don't necessarily, you know, provide food and shelter for people, but basically live on advertising potential, and they're valued into the billions. But I don't know how to argue with with tech. I might not make it home alive today. I would like to say to people in the tech industry that one of the things that we're experiencing in the arts in San Francisco is the extreme difficulty getting all of these millionaires, and in some cases billionaires, to support the arts. Let's get with it.
They're not necessarily known for their largesse in that area, are they? I mean, might as well put it bluntly. John Adams, famed composer with us in studio's new opera is Girls of the Golden West. It runs at the San Francisco Opera through the 10th of December. Shouldn't you call it Women of the Golden West? I mean, this is you're a feminist. Actually, what I wanted to ask you, this is going to be a little flip perhaps, but I'm dead serious about this. I think I can't get this out of my head, that mining for gold is a little bit like composing or writing in many ways, isn't it?
Well, yeah. In my book, Hallelujah Junction, I did say that, you know, I go up in the Sierras and I see these amateur gold miners up there looking for a nugget when basically almost all the good gold has been found. And, you know, when I think about being a composer living in 2017 and looking back to Bach and Beethoven and Mozart and Mahler, I sometimes feel like I'm sort of one of those amateur gold miners, just be happy if I can get a little tiny nugget after a whole day's work.
Shall we dispel the notion that that Puccini had a great deal to do with this opera?
Yes, we can dispel that. Our title is sort of a witty reference to the Puccini opera, which is called Girl of the Golden West when it's done in English, is really like kind of like a Jack London romantic view of the old California. Puccini's exposure to California was by watching silent cowboy movies.
And here's Harriet, who writes, there is a dramatic account of Josepha and San Francisco poet laureate Alejandro Murguia's excellent The Medicine of Memory. Thanks to Mr. Adams for choosing this important material to write about, and Julia Bullock for creating Dame Shirley on stage. Joel writes, I saw you in the 1990s conducting the San Francisco Symphony, performing your piece called El Dorado. In introducing the work, you said, and I paraphrase, the piece is a lamentation on man's indefatigable urge to defile his own nest. Do you see the current political landscape as a potent example of the dynamic and of that dynamic, and are you inspired to address it artistically?
Well, I think almost unwittingly, I addressed it very consciously and or very intently in this new opera. Yeah, I mean, you just have to look at you know, who our Secretary of Interior is and who are, you know, all the people that are in Washington in power now and what their attitude towards the environment and the climate is. And, yeah, it's just genuinely disturbing.
You got a bit of the political provocateur in you. I mean, boy, you really, in fact, I don't think anything you've done has roused the kind of wrath and outrage of Klinghoffer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, this is an opera about a hijacking by a group of Palestinian commandos or terrorists, depending on how you wanted to view them. And it caused a great deal of furor when it was done at the Metropolitan Opera a few years back. I was subject to a really organized shaming campaign on the internet. And at the world premiere, we had Rudolph Giuliani standing outside with the crowd protesting, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg sitting inside defending the opera. So it was obviously an opera that cut right down the usual political left and right in the country.
And there's Christopher, who writes, can John Adams address the riots that happened at the premiere of Stravinsky's Rite of Spring in the context of the controversy surrounding his new work?
Well, the Rite of Spring premiere, of course, has risen to the level of musical mythology. You know, everybody likes to talk about how people were fighting in the aisles and screaming and the police had to be called. And I sort of doubt it. I got a feeling that it was a chaotic first performance. And, of course, people were very much more vocal in Europe in those days than they are now. You know, premieres are very, very traumatic experiences, and you just have to sort of survive them, pick yourself up, brush yourself off, just like Dame Shirley does when she falls off the mule.
Saying you have some post-traumatic stress from your premiere just the other week.
And you just head on and keep doing it.
Let's keep doing another caller. Michelle joins us from Napa. Michelle, you're on.
Hello. Thank you so much for taking my call. I wanted to go back and address the part where you had expressed frustration that younger generations are not interested in classical music anymore. And I wanted to add, I'm trained classically, and classical music does speak to my soul. When I was in college, I often sang to audiences of older music lovers, and now that I'm a mother, I've been attempting to introduce my own daughter to classical music, but we've been in some ways locked out because of the stiff environment.
I'm sorry, Michelle, can I ask if there's a question? We're running short on time.
Oh, okay. There's no question. I just wanted to say that I've noticed that children aren't welcome, and because of that, I feel locked out. And it's easier to attend music concerts from other ethnic groups rather than from classical music, which is one of the reasons why we aren't interested.
I didn't say that children are not interested. I think children are interested. The question is simply that they need to be exposed to it, and they need practice and education, and then they love it.
Thank you so much, John Adams. Congratulations on another opera, and we're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. Our repeated night forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Gucci, Tina Larberg, Susan Britton. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. Engineer is Danny Bringer. Engagement producer Amanda Stupai, with help from Devin Holt. And we get online support from Amanda Font. Interns are Anna Sterla and Patrick Fitzgerald. Managing editor Ethan Lindsay. Executive producer Holly Kernan. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.